The Katrina story is your story. Our story, New Orleans story. Friday on the anniversary of the storm, you can join WWL for a special day-long broadcast featuring me, Newell Norman, and Dave Cohen, and Scoot live from the Presbyterian in historic Jackson Square from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can hear interviews you haven't heard before about the rescue, recovery, and rebirth in one of our America's most beloved cities, brought to you by Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and Louisiana State Museums. And there's an amazing free symposium, too, Living with Hurricanes. And that is Katrina and Beyond, Imagine for the Next Generation, from 10 a.m. until noon. And one block away at La Petite Theater, moderated by Norman Robinson, features Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, Walter Isaacson, Aaron Broussard, former mayor of Lafitte, Tim Kerner. You can tour then the updated exhibition at the Presbyterian from noon till 4, free and open to the public. And one of the sadder things that I remember about Katrina was NOPD spokesperson Paul Accardo that checked out a body bag and then zipped himself up in it in his patrol car and took his own life. And he was just, I know he lost his home and he was depressed about everything that was going on in the city. And it was one of the more, every loss is important, but that one really struck me for whatever reason. 8:11, we'll take a break, talk to Ronald Surpass when we come back on WWL. Now? Okay. 8:16, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Ronald Surpass, our friend, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, head of the Washington State Police and the Nashville City Police, consultant to numerous police departments and organizations. You see him on TV occasionally, on national TV. How you doing, Chief?
I'm really good, Tommy. Just got back from California and one of the larger agencies there, and looking at the things they're fighting to do the best job they can, just like happens in New Orleans every day.
So let's talk about Katrina. I know you were not. Were you here for that or not? No.
No, I was the chief in Nashville.
That's what I figured. So let's talk about preparing a department for something like this. Did Katrina change the way superintendents or chiefs of police go about preparing departments for a major disaster like this?
No question about it. I mean, when I was the number two chief with Pennington and a gentleman named Jimmy Treadaway, one of our majors, we rebuilt the entire radio infrastructure system and did a redundancy, did two versions, right? Nobody ever would have expected Katrina would have knocked both of those out. So that was a learning point. Another learning point, and it's basic to command and control, if you can't communicate with the people who work for you, then you can't communicate direction and accountability and responsibility. So we actually created, as though many departments, call-out lists. So if an officer, if another Katrina had happened during our time from 2010 to 2014, officers would have known where to go if they had no contact from us. If the whole radio system failed again, they would know where to go, and we would know where to expect to find them. That was one of the things that happened to Katrina, totally unexpected by the department. They really didn't know where a lot of people were. The third thing is that when you think about what happened during the Dome, during the Super Bowl in 2013, again, no one expected that the lights would completely go out in the Dome. So then you have to start reassessing, well, how would you get 70,000 people out of the Dome as quickly as you could had the lights actually gone permanently? Were our plans sufficient? Did we tabletop it? Did we exercise it? So where I just came from in California, they have a lot of exercises they need to do for earthquakes and fires. So basically the message is you learn every time how to be better in the event it happens again, because nobody can think of everything.
You know what?
Experience is what helps you.
One thing I know, remembers that of the uniforms being stolen, then they didn't know who were the police officers and who weren't. That's something, I guess, that was gleaned from this, where you have to somehow secure uniforms, or is there any way to do that if an officer's home gets burglarized or whatever? I don't know. Tell me about that.
Well, absolutely, that's an issue. And one of the things New Orleans does not have is a uniform shop that it owns, right? A quartermastering system. Mm-hmm. Nashville has a quartermastering system. Washington State Patrol has a quartermastering system. We would probably have been able to deal with that quicker. However, you're right. These are the lessons that you learn after you plan and after you plan. And look, New Orleans, Tommy, I've lived here all my life. You've lived here all your life. Hurricanes are not unknown to us. They might be unknown to the national media, but we see them every year. And what happens is, and even talking to people in the NOPD who I've worked with all my life and my family, everybody kind of gets to this, it's just another storm in the Gulf. It's another storm in the Gulf. My father was a police officer during Betsy and Camille. And I was in Nashville, and I was calling him. He's now passed, rest his soul. I said, Dad, are you leaving? He said, man, look, we've been through this before. About 24 to 48 hours out, I called him because the picture of Katrina over the Gulf was the whole Gulf. I said, what's going on? He said, man, I'm getting the hell out of here. What happens is people get kind of inured. They get kind of used to the same rhythm. And I'm thinking Katrina's one of the best things that happened from that horrible tragedy is I think people are less likely to just say, nah, let's just, it's just another storm. And that's good because the bottom line is this, Tommy, you can't provide public safety and rescue to people who you know are going to be in places where you can't get to them unless they leave. So getting people to recognize the value of leaving where they are so that the police are less responding to those places where you can't get to them, really, and you can do more of the other things you need to do, order maintenance, peacekeeping. So evacuation is crucial. It's really crucial. The sooner you can get people out of harm's way, the more efficient the police department can be at peacekeeping and order maintenance, which means trying to keep people from breaking into your house while you're gone. That kind of thing is a big lesson after Katrina.
And look, I'm all for generators. I was talking to Craig from Craig's Generators at the home show on Sunday. But one concern I have is that people don't realize that power and water are two different things, so that even though you have a generator, if there's a threat of like another Katrina, you still have to go.
Yeah, I think people should trust that the government is getting better technology all the time on forecasting storms, which gives us more time. You know, in the olden days when Nash Roberts was here, I will tell you, he was never wrong. No matter what the technology advancements were of the day, Nash Roberts was always right. But we are better now. And when the city says we're 120 hours out and we've got a 50% certainty that this thing is coming this way, they're going to start messaging that early and often. And hopefully the more people who can move out, the better the government will be at responding to what's left.
All right, let me take a break. We'll talk about the psychological effects on a department when we return. Ronald Surpass, professor, practice department of criminal justice, the Loyola, former NOPD chief, not during Katrina, but has a lot of experience in the police business or the police world, and we'll talk about the psychological effects of something like this on a force when we return. 822 Traffic Now, WWL. 8:27 half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Our Katrina commemoration continues. We're talking to Ronald Surpass. We pick his brain about police work and crime every week, but we thought we'd talk about dealing with a natural disaster like this, although, to be clear, it was a man-made disaster in New Orleans. It was the poor construction of the levees that caused the problems with the city flooding. How do you go about dealing with the psychological aspects of this with the police force, Chief? Because it changed everybody. Everybody is, in one way or the other, different because of Katrina.
Tommy, I'm going to tell you the honest truth. When I was listening to it from afar, I got a sense of what was going to be an issue. And when I came back, it was confirmed. And here is the issue. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of New Orleans police officers did brave and dramatic things every day. And the handful of people who chose to do incredibly horrific things have cast to the ash heap of history the bravery of hundreds and hundreds of officers. And look, I'll say it, they won't say it, but the cops who were on Napoleon Avenue with water up to their clavicles, who never did anything wrong, who went to work every day, who sacrificed their lives, sacrificed their friends. And then you have what happened in Algiers. You have what happened on the bridge. And what that did is it demoralized the troops, because that's all people talked about, as they should, right? The loss of life at the hands of police is horrible when people were convicted. But the point is, it distracted from the bravery of hundreds of people. The second issue that I think really damaged the morale and psyche of the department as a whole was the runaways, the cops who just said, I'm out. Those two things were crucial in assessing where the NOPD's mental position was when I came back in 10 through 14. And that's the two things I think that hurt the officers personally at their work level involvement, not their homes, not their families, not their houses. But when they know what they were doing and they see what these other people did, and now they know history will reflect on Katrina because of the Danziger Bridge and because of Algiers, that's devastating for their morale. And I think it still is in there someplace.
How do you get police officers to stay? Because part of the problem was a lot of police officers didn't show up and they evacuated. How do you deal with that? Do you get the families out of town? Do you make arrangements for that? And that's what we do here. It's like everybody gets their families out of town and then you don't have to worry about that. But you're here to do your job. Is that the way you look at it with the police force? Is that an important step in that?
Absolutely. I'm sure Katrina gave us better understanding of how serious to take that. Remember, I was the chief in Nashville when we had the 1,000-year flood, and we had 20, 30 feet of standing water.
That's right, yeah.
But guess what? That water drained away within a day or two because it's a gravity-fed system. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody needed to recognize, and I'm sure we did it when I was a chief, a major, a captain, a lieutenant. But I think Katrina reminded us, you need to be more straightforward with the officers. Hey, look, we're 4 days out. You really need to get your life in order because you have to come back. Everybody in my family, all the females in my family are nurses.
Mm-hmm.
They were all told the same thing. They were told, hey, Katrina's coming. Y'all get yourselves together because you have to come back here and take care of these people who can't leave. That's the nature of public service. Nurses, police officers, firefighters, EMT workers. We have to provide them safety for their families, and there's nothing wrong with that, and it's desired so that we can count on them to come back and help your family. I think Katrina helped really crystallize that point with better planning.
Thank you, Chief. Insights, as always, very interesting. Ronald Surpass, Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola. When we come back, we're talking to Steve Geller about the Saints' final roster. Who made it, who didn't, and what can we expect? Right now, it's time for WWL First News. 8:45, quarter till 9, joined by Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. How you doing, Steve?
Oh, man, Tommy, doing fantastic today. Was hurting yesterday, played it out, came home, took some meds, ended up sleeping 10 hours, woke up feeling fantastic. So all is great.
You can't help us if you're not on the field, Steve. You know that,
yes,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about that young man at Rummel. He's getting ready.
Oh, you know it. And we got the Jamboree on Friday. Hoss is going to fill in for me on Friday, Sports Talks. So going to get go check out the Jamboree game for Rummel.
When does Rummel play Shaw? Do you know?
I think it's later in the season.
Okay. I'll be there. You'll be there?
All right, cool.
All right, good. Let's talk about the Saints' final 53. Is it the final 53 or not?
The initial 53.
The initial 53. There you go.
Right. You're basically, you're set at most positions right now, but there are going to be maneuvers here and there. We've seen the Saints make three trades already, adding to this roster. I don't expect them to sit on their hands either anymore. They're going to still be aggressive, attack the waiver wire with people that have been released by other teams. And we've heard interest from anywhere from running back to punter with this squad. So would definitely think there's still more moves ahead for this team. So not the final 53 yet.
Tell me about Asim Richards. Asim, how do you pronounce his name?
I think you're right, Asim.
Okay.
they're definitely filling a need for that swing, that extra offensive lineman that this Saints team has lost so much depth with this, you know, the preseason. A fifth-round pick from the Dallas Cowboys, spent some, you know, his start of his career there, and definitely someone that you figure will slot more in at the left tackle position is where he's primarily lined up. And, you know, like I said, the depth has just been torched by this team, unfortunately, in the preseason. And the offensive line, the health was an issue last year and looks to be that case again. So definitely a welcome body to a group that's been banged up. Hopefully we don't get to see too much of him, like I said, since he's in a reserve role. But right now, even with guys like, you know, Trevor Penning's dealing with the toe issue, we heard that Talase Fuaga had a knee injury but wasn't deemed anything too serious. Well, I'll feel a lot more comfortable when he's back out there playing.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the cornerback situation, is that the final six?
That's definitely one of the spots I'm looking at to acquire some more people for the roster, whether it's depth or not.
At the expense of whom?
Yeah, that's then you start looking around at who do you end up trying to maybe move to the practice squad.
Right.
But with
sneak through waivers, right? Because you got it in the procedure now. If you move them to practice squad, they got to clear waivers first or not?
Right, exactly. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, there's a whole – you could end up losing the guy to another team if they decide to try and scoop him up. But right now you're looking, I would think, Kool-Aid – is your starting corner along with Ike Yadom.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Alante Taylor, who's we haven't seen in a while, dealing with a groin issue. that he is the slot corner for you, but nothing has given you any hope that he's going to be ready week one. We haven't seen him on the field forever, hoping that that happens sooner than later. But, you know, you have other depth pieces like Rajon Wright, Ugo Amadi.
Ugo Amadi's played well in the preseason, has he not?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I would expect him to start in Alante Taylor's slot if Taylor isn't ready. Mm-hmm. And then also mentioning real quick, Quincy Riley, the rookie, who has, you know, shown off his prowess of intercepting balls in the preseason and at training camp. So he could be an addition there. I don't know how quickly they want to throw him out to the Wolves in this defense.
Let me run a crazy idea by you. And somebody texted this in about Justin Reed kicked a field goal, I think, with Kansas City. If the idea now is instead of hitting the full driver when you kick off, instead you're hitting like a little punch four iron to get it to land wherever they want it to land, at the five or whatever. Man, I would have Justin Reed kick off, and so you got an extra player on special teams that can actually play, and no disrespect to Blake Groupie, but his job is pretty much not to get hurt at that point, right?
Yeah, I don't know how precise Reed can be at doing that.
Don't call me a squirrel. I'm just saying, having kicked the football only in high school, I know that, but it ain't that hard. If I can do it, it can't be that hard, because I am not an athlete, and I'm just thinking, man, I don't know. Why not, you know, if it makes you more effective on special teams?
You're going to have to come out to the Saints media, I guess, combine, you would call it. They're going to actually have select members punting, kicking, and throwing balls. So I'm going to sign you up for the kicking.
Do that.
So,
when is it?
It's coming up soon. Definitely, I think maybe next week, like a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Sign me up, brah. I still got the shoe. All right? Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. We'll pick it up here when we return. 851, 9 till 9, traffic, WWL. 857, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Steve Geller texting me these thing for the media, but it's on September 3rd at 9 o'clock. I'd have to take the day off, and it's punt, pass, and kick. I ain't throwing anything. I ain't punting anything. I'm here to kick the football, and that's it. Six corners, five safeties, five linebackers. That kind of goes to the nature of offenses in the NFL, right, with the passing game. And how likely is that number to change, Steve, at each position?
Yeah, I think the biggest concern for me was, well, how many of those defensive linemen were you going to keep? And the, you know, who ended up making it, not a surprise at all. Glad to see Vernon Broughton, the rookie, getting some action. He's going to be playing defensive end. Mm-hmm. Christian Boyd, the backup now, nose tackle to Devon Godshaw, who's been one of the best additions for this team coming into this season, in my opinion. And then you look at, with the linebacker room, really solid guys, DeMario Davis and Pete Werner are your main studs there. And then the rookie and Danny Stutzman, a lot of fans have been latching onto him as one of their, you know, a fan favorite early on.
I latched on to him when the Saints drafted him, because I remember when Oklahoma played LSU, he stood out, and I don't remember players. And for me to remember a guy, he's got to be pretty good, and he's played well this preseason. So is he likely to start?
I think you're going to see him more like cycling in. He's a backup role, basically, I would think, behind DeMario Davis for that Mike linebacker spot. Okay. And you got to love the fact, though, like you saw on his Instagram page while he was at Oklahoma, he's like, I'm like communion, that cracker with the juice.
Well, I don't think we had to go there. Tell me about the punting situation and kicking. Well, obviously, it's Blake Groupie, but what about punting?
Yeah, Kai Kroger ends up being the Saints punter now, and another new punter going into this season. You look at it, the rookie had a decent showing, I guess you could say, for this squad. But like I said, Adam Schefter had reported the Saints were interested in possibly trading for a punter. So I don't think that position's set. Mm. And I would leave Kroger's name in pencil right now on the roster.
Mm. I know he holds on the field goals, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. That was definitely a sign. He was ahead of Burnett.
Blake Groupie's been on fire, so I wouldn't change anything with that, but I don't know. I haven't seen any punt. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. We'll be listening this afternoon. You guys are going to be talking sports, and then tomorrow you'll be at Treasure Chest, right?
Yeah, looking forward. Always our weekend kickoff at Treasure Chest, 4 to 7 o'clock.
All right, we'll be listening. When we come back, we're going to talk to Nick Ewan, a senior editorial director at The Points Guy. We can never get enough of this man, and y'all